Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher and the first of a new weekly Statehouse Reporters Roundtable. The Statehouse never sleeps, as they say. So joining us today is Daryl Rowland, Public Affairs Editor for the Columbus Dispatch. Daryl, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ann. Good morning.
Also, Laura Bischoff. She's a Statehouse Bureau Chief, the Dayton Daily News correspondent.
Oh, yeah, call me
is
whatever you want.
Fancy? Okay, no. All right. And making her debut appearance on All Sides is Chrissy Thompson. She's a Statehouse correspondent for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Before moving to Ohio a year ago, she covered the auto industry for the Detroit Free Press, but sad to say, she is not from Michigan. Welcome anyways, Chrissy.
Well, thank you so much.
Where do we even get started? I guess with politics. How about politics? We got some polling numbers. Daryl, you want to tell us how the gubernatorial race is polling these days?
Sure, Ann. Probably the most expected thing is that nobody knows Ed Fitzgerald really well. It's like, okay, we're 11 months out from the election.
Not even in Cleveland, not even in Cuyahoga County?
Well, we don't have breakdowns like that. But from a statewide standpoint, there's still a lot of unknowns out there. Having said that, you know, it's not like John Kasich has a commanding lead either. So it's
what about 7 percentage points or something
like that? Certainly in single digits. You look at this parallel time 4 years ago, and, you know, Kasich was behind, but again, at this time 4 years ago, he was out raising money, which is very critical for this time of the campaign because you're going to need at least 15, if not 20, or even more million to run a credible race in Ohio.
Has he been raising money all along, though?
Supposedly, we're going to see, you know, in a month or two, just how this fall season went. The last filing period, he was, again, you look at that time frame, the political calendar runs in 4 years, since that's what the gubernatorial term is. Mm-hmm. So 4 years earlier, Fitzgerald was on about the same fundraising cycle, if you will, amount as Kasich was, with some help from the Ohio Democratic Party for Fitzgerald. But Kasich raised a whole bunch of money in these corresponding 3 months 4 years ago through the Republican Governors Association, things like that. So we will see if Fitzgerald has a good fundraising quarter when those numbers come out here in, like I say, several weeks.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We have a Statehouse Reporters Roundtable right now. If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Laura?
Well, I was looking at the Quinnipiac poll numbers. The poll came out last week, of course, looking at those numbers just before I came here today. And it does show that John Kasich is up by 7 points over Fitzgerald. That's down from a 14% lead in June. And if the election were held today, which, of course, it's not, 44% say they'd be for John Kasich, 37% for Ed Fitzgerald. But again, as Daryl says, not very many people know enough about Ed Fitzgerald to have an opinion. 71% say they don't know. And although among the ones who do have an opinion of him, it's pretty favorable. John Kasich is getting he's above the magic 50% line for job approval. He's at 52% according to this poll.
Today.
Mercyhurst University, also that's in Erie, Pennsylvania, they came out with their first Ohio poll, I think last week or the week before, and they showed Kasich at 50% job approval rating. So that's a pretty good position for Kasich. And what's interesting is that Ohioans seem to think that the Ohio economy is, it's not that great. Like 63% say the economy is not improving or it's getting worse. 58% say that the economy is not so good or poor. But they seem to think that Ohio's economy is doing better than the national economy, which is actually not true. The unemployment is a teeny bit ahead. Ohio's unemployment is at 7.5. The national unemployment is 7.3. So things have started to kind of taper off and lag in Ohio, but Ohioans don't seem to recognize
that. Well, maybe that's because things are a lot better in Ohio than they were 5 years ago.
That's possible. I mean, the Ohio economy was ahead of pace for quite a while, you know, mostly due to the stimulus package, the auto bailouts, things like that. And now that the rest of the U.S. economy is continuing to grow, we've sort of stagnated a little bit. But usually there's about a 3 to 6 month lag in what the public perceives the economy is doing. So how the economy is doing at the time of the election will certainly matter, but also how long whatever stage we're in has lasted and whether that's sunk into voters.
So then maybe 3 or 6 months out from the election day will be more critical than today or election day as
yeah,
far
maybe.
As public
but
perception.
I think Chrissy had a good story last week about how economists look at the economy and how the public does.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that what I thought was interesting, my takeaway from that was that we did have this bump in manufacturing because of the auto bailout and because of the stimulus money, and that helped kind of boost Ohio's numbers, but then it's tapered off. And we're back to, what do the economists call it, returning trends?
Returning to trend. That just basically means Ohio's economy has, for a couple of decades, lagged the U.S. economy, and we are once again lagging the U.S. economy.
So you also wrote about what economists think about who takes credit and who takes the blame. Who politicians routinely, traditionally do that, constantly blaming or taking credit for. What did the economists say about that?
I mean, the bottom line is that there's nothing that a governor, for instance, could do in a 4-year term to make a meaningful impact on the economy, according to most economists. There are some longer term things, maybe taxes, education, growing the workforce. But you really can't see a 4-year change in, for instance, workforce development.
And yet, Daryl, that's the number one issue for people.
Oh, sure. And you, this may be back when I think back in your dispatch days when the previous income tax cuts, state income tax cuts, took effect in Ohio. I remember they took effect 1 month, and the next month there were a couple employers decided to move to Ohio, and immediately the public release machines went out from the Republican legislators saying, see, our tax cuts are already working. They're already moving in. Not seeing many of those releases nowadays.
No, you're not. And anyways, you could have called those companies probably, and they would have said, well, heck, we've been working on this for 2 years.
Exactly. and it goes to your point. It's just sort of like the quarterback of the football team or the coach, you know, too much credit and too much blame accrues. In some ways, it's working around the edges. Not to say the edges are unimportant. I mean, you do what you can do if you're in public office.
Yeah, this is pretty nuanced, and I don't think the general public is really following it as closely as we do. But it's interesting that Kasich decided to, you know, talk about the Ohio miracle when the numbers started to trend upward and kind of tie it to the tax cuts and to Jobs Ohio and to the work that his administration has been doing. And now the economic numbers are stagnating, and he's kind of changing his message a little bit.
Yeah, suddenly now it's we're back to the headwinds from Washington. And you know, so again, both sides do it. If it's good, it's
right.
to our credit. If it's bad, it's the other guy's fault.
Anthony in Grandview, you're on the air. Welcome, Anthony.
I'm caller. Love the show.
Thank you.
Just wanted to say that, you know, as the challenger to Governor Kasich, Fitzgerald has been getting out there. I think he's visited almost all of 88 counties in Ohio. We're really starting to see those numbers change for John Kasich as far as the more people who know Ed Fitzgerald and an athlete is putting back goal, his name recognition numbers are really low. But if the more people who get to know him and realize there's an alternative to John Kasich, we're starting to see Kasich's numbers really start to slip. And I think that, you know, the election is, you know, a year away, and the closer we get to that election day, more people who see those clear divides between the challenger and the incumbent, those numbers are really going to shift. But it's all about trend lines. If you look at John Kasich's job approval numbers, or if you look at his polling numbers, just look at that trend line of how people are starting to shift away from him. Starting to remember things like Senate Bill 5 and these devastating budget cuts that really have hurt our local communities and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's really starting to shift away from John Kasich. You brought up the Ohio miracle, and I think that's just a funny line by Kasich, because the miracle is that, you know, we've been able to survive the last 3 years of the Kasich administration with devastating cuts.
Now you're starting to sound like a professional, Anthony.
No. I'm just a listener.
Okay.
I just think it's a miracle that our communities, our local communities, our schools can survive with such devastating budget cuts. It's,
okay.
It's unfortunate.
Well, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah, I mean, 7 percentage points is not what I would have imagined at this point, to tell you the truth. I'm kind of surprised at that. But Laura Bischoff?
I still think that it's John Kasich's race to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Being up 7 points and having 52% job approval is it puts him in a pretty good position. It's not going to be a walk away for him. I think that Fitzgerald will give it'll be a good race. A lot of it will, like Daryl says, depend on how much money he can raise to get his name out there and define himself as an alternative and as a guy who'd be a good governor before John Kasich uses his money to define him in a negative light.
What do we know about Fitzgerald's popularity and whether he can bring home the bacon in Northeast Ohio?
Well, he hasn't been in as the Cuyahoga County representative that long. I think he was elected, 3 years ago, maybe? So, and before that, he was the mayor of Lakewood, a suburb. So it really, it's difficult to say what kind of track record he has because he just hasn't been on the political scene that long.
Sometimes no track record at all, though, isn't such a bad thing, all things being equal.
Well, first of all, Fitzgerald has to avoid getting painted with the Cuyahoga County corruption brush that, Republicans have been tried to, unsuccessfully in my view, to put him in that picture with Jimmy DeMore and the rest of the folks serving prison terms or indicted or what have you. The Democratic narrative, by contrast, is, here's Mr. Clean brought in to clean things up. Interestingly, you may be seeing this a little bit in that some of the traditional political machinery in Cuyahoga County are maybe a little hesitant to support Ed Fitzgerald. That can cut both ways.
That's an interesting dynamic, right?
Because you certainly need the support. There's so many ward leaders and what have you, but to not have, to think you've gotten all the bad people out, if you will, would be naive as well. So maybe it's not all bad to say these guys aren't 100% for me because, that maybe gives me a little more street cred as Mr. Clean.
We are talking about the gubernatorial race for 2014 between incumbent John Kasich and Democratic challenger Ed Fitzgerald with Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, Chrissy Thompson for the Cincinnati Inquirer, and Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we'll turn our sights to Ed Fitzgerald's running mate. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to our Reporters Roundtable with Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Inquirer, and Daryl Rowland from the Columbus Dispatch. If you have a question or comment about statehouse and state government and state politics, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Okay, so the elephant in the corner? Is Senator Eric Kearney Ed Fitzgerald's running mate? The Democratic gubernatorial campaign of Ed Fitzgerald has now said that there is absolutely no way they're going to dump Senator Kearney as his running mate since the issue arose of him not only owing taxes but being behind on his American Express bill. It just goes on and on and on. Chrissy Thompson, did people in Southwest Ohio, did people in the Cincinnati area know about Senator Kearney's money problems?
Well, some of this emerged as an issue in his last campaign for state senate, but it really wasn't a major factor that he won that race.
So this wasn't news?
Well, some of it was. The personal lien, which a lien is a claim that the government makes on your tax or on your property when you haven't paid your taxes. Mm-hmm. The personal lien, which was around $200,000 and is now down to about $84,000, they say that they have paid back the remainder of that. That we knew about in 2010, but the business that Kearney and his wife own, she's the primary day-to-day publisher of the Cincinnati Herald, which is an African-American newspaper in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. The business owes several $100,000 in taxes. There's a lien for that. And the question we have right now, which we're waiting to hear from the Fitzgerald campaign, is how much of that has been paid back, whether that was transferred over into the personal lien. There's no documentation of that right now, and so that's the big question. And then in addition to that, there's another $100,000 in state taxes. And then, of course, my colleague Sherry Coolidge found this lawsuit over $15,000 in American Express bills. So quite a bit of unpaid bills, unpaid taxes, that the amount that we've always known there was an amount, but the amount has definitely grown over the last few days.
So this was known before. Daryl Rowland, what do you think make of Ed Fitzgerald choosing someone like Eric Kearney with this kind of baggage? And it's baggage no matter what.
Sure. Well, what you heard right away was the question, we consider the questions asked and answered, sort of a legal phraseology. And Chrissy's absolutely right. Some of this, not all of it, but some of this did come up in Kearney's last campaign. Didn't make a difference. Of course, again, with Ohio's legislative districts being so gerrymandered, you know, you may have been an axe murderer and that wouldn't have made a difference as well. Right now, it's just a big muddle. Again, some new revelations. This is not what Ed Fitzgerald wants right out of the gate. Is a big controversy over what may be the most critical choice he's going to make in his entire campaign. And again, it almost doesn't matter right now how it's all going to shake out. It's just this is taking him off message. This is not what the campaign wants to be talking about. You know, it's just like free lunch for a free feeding frenzy for the Republicans. And even once this shakes out, in my view, Kearney's pushing back as well as saying, well, now I understand, I can empathize now with all you small business people out there who do struggle, you know, to meet a payroll or to pay your debts or to, you know, deal with the federal government, what have you. Okay, that may all wash out. The things that are real dangers, I think, is did he mislead or not fulfill the law on his financial disclosure statements filed with the State Ethics Commission? Was that filing inadequate? Because then it's not this mushy,
Well, have we seen it?
I looked at those filings, and I did see that, Department of Taxation was listed. Actually, it was listed as ODOT, but Ohio okay. Department of Taxation, he okay. owed money. The U.S. Treasury, he owed money. He did list credit cards as debtors. So I don't know if there's a question of whether or not he failed to disclose.
He listed ODOT shareholder, which... in the parlance of state government, ODOT, first of all, is Ohio Department of Transportation.
Right.
So anyone just looking at that, I mean, again, this goes to kind of some weakness in Ohio's financial disclosure laws. So, but I don't know that tale's yet to be told for all the years in which you owed. You know, you have to file not just once, but every year that debt is outstanding.
Right.
So does he list all the debts? Does he list all his creditors and do so properly in a way that's not... cannot be reasonably interpreted as misleading the public.
I think it's important to note also that the Eric Kearney choice was supposed to be a big help for Ed Fitzgerald. This poll that we were talking about earlier, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he polled 68%, Ed Fitzgerald did, with African Americans. And some people are saying that needs to be higher in Ohio to win as a Democrat, mm-hmm. right? Eric Kearney is a strong African American leader in our state. He's well connected with the president. His wife went to law school and is a personal friend of the Obamas. He also is a really, really strong fundraiser because
right.
he led the Obama campaign in Ohio. So all of those things are supposed to be a big plus for Ed Fitzgerald right now. And to have to answer all these questions right now, it's a negative for him, and it's certainly not the direction he wanted this to go.
I would imagine it's better to get it over if it is there, and Fitzgerald knew about it, and who wants to be sidetracked by it? But if he knew about it, then what did he expect? It'd be better now than 6 months from now.
Yeah, but at the same time, the Democrats have really bungled this because when they announced him, they should have had all of the numbers all figured out.
Right.
How much did he owe? How much has been paid? How much of it is personal? How much is to the business? How much is in dispute? And all of that, every time you call, you get different numbers every single day. So this is turning into a story that just has got, keeps getting into the papers over and over and over
again. The drip, 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 as we like to put it sometimes.
Right. And when I hear campaign spokespeople start to say, you know, this is really not what Ed Fitzgerald wants to talk about, it's like, really? That's the understatement of the century. But, you know, give us the information.
Well, the ironic part was, you know, I was at the rally, the end of the two-day tour to introduce Senator Kearney as running mate. And I thought, you know, previously I thought Fitzgerald had performed maybe adequately, but wasn't setting the world on fire. I thought he did really well in his Columbus appearance. So the call of the dimension that Fitzgerald's been to, I think, at least 87 of the counties. I don't know who's been left out, but I think maybe he is growing as a candidate. And, you know, when you've covered the political wars in Ohio, you see that from a, you know, way back when, from a Lee Fisher or even a Michael Coleman, as he was his running mate. They do get out there in the hustings, and you can hone your message, you know, down in Ross County or whatever. And then you come back under the glare of the media spotlight here in the state capitol, and hey, they've really improved. So for this to come, now just as maybe Fitzgerald was starting to hit his stride, you know, as my colleagues have pointed out, you know, a selection is very popular with a very important constituency to anyone wanting Democratic success. You know, it's just awful timing from that sense. But you're right. You know, for having all this controversy right before Thanksgiving of the year before the election may be ideal if it can be resolved successfully.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We have a state House Reporters Roundtable today, and we welcome your questions or comments, talking about state government, politics, you name it, with Laura Bischoff, Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Inquirer, and Darryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. Vince in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Yeah, my question is, will the governor be able to use his strong support for Medicaid expansion in the coming campaign? Will it be a plus or a minus, or will it be tailored to any particular county that he's campaigning in?
Well, now that he doesn't have a primary, Laura Bischoff?
Well, I would say it's gonna be both a plus and a minus. It will be a plus with independent voters and moderate Democrats. He might be able to pick up some support there, but it's going to be a big negative with the fiscal conservatives, to the point where a lot of them might just peel off and vote for the Libertarian instead, and that could hurt him in a tight race. The Quinnipiac poll showed, I think it was Quinnipiac. PPP poll. It was the PPP poll, which was commissioned by the Ohio Democratic Party, but it showed the Libertarian Charlie Earle getting 6% of the vote in a three-way race, and that 6% could really make a difference.
That's right. So remember, Laura said earlier in the program that Governor Kasich is up 7 points right now. So that could make a huge difference. It's interesting, though, that because Charlie Earle was not in that poll, that Quinnipiac poll. But it's really interesting that the Medicaid expansion was a part of the Quinnipiac poll, and it essentially showed no change in how Governor Kasich would do in the election. About half of the people who said they cared said it was a positive for them. The other half said it was a negative for them, and then the remainder of the people said it didn't change their opinion of the governor. So that I thought was really interesting.
And how did the Democrats use it against him?
Well, I don't think they use that against
him.
I think the only way they can say is, we actually agree on the Medicaid expansion, but that is just about the only soft point in a hard-edged guy who's gone out and, you know, turned down the federal waiver and is, you know, throwing people off food stamps in Ohio. The welfare rolls have gone down, cut local schools, cut the local government fund, things like that. Again, this is the what the Democrats can successfully use, but I don't think they can use Medicaid expansion, not when all their own members voted for that. So I think it's a, you know, that is a, you know, all the converse of all those things the Kasich people can use. So if he does need an edge softener with, you know, the crowd that's not hardline conservative, it's like, hey, you know, we got a 250,000 people more eligible for Medicaid now because of me, because I went around the legislature and went to that extraordinary length.
You know, doing things for poor people is not a really big popular thing for politicians in general. So this is an area in which Kasich has kind of gone against the grain, the GOP grain. And I think that it's sort of interesting because it sort of shows how he can't really be pigeonholed as a strictly fiscal conservative or strictly a a compassionate conservative or what have you.
And yet, he's now urging the president and Congress to draft a federal balanced budget amendment. What do you make of that, Darrell Rowland? Is that his? Okay, wait a minute. I'm going to do something you're going to like. Act.
Yeah, and of course, you know, all this is pretty much meaningless posturing, quite frankly.
Right?
I mean, okay, officially we're trying to get a constitutional convention and all that. Yeah, good luck with that. It probably doesn't hurt. It's another way of reminding people that, hey, you know, the last time we actually did have a balanced budget, guess who was the House Budget Committee chairman? It was the man who's governor right now. So don't mention that Bill Clinton was president, Newt Gingrich was speaker. There were other people involved other than John Kasich. People outside Ohio at least know that. Okay, maybe this does shore back up his cred with conservatives. And, you know, when it comes down to it, conservatives are going to have to ask themselves a question. It's like, all right, I may really dislike this one area on the Medicaid expansion with Kasich, but do I dislike that so much that I want Ed Fitzgerald, a Democrat, to be governor? Am I going to, you know, am I feeling strong enough where I'm just going to say, no, someone I hate even worse than Kasich, I'm going to, you know, bite off that nose.
Is the Medicaid, though, expansion the only thing that the governor's done to tick off the right wing of his party and the Tea Party folks?
You know, every time I talk to leaders of the Ohio Liberty Council, right, mm-hmm. CS Council, they are a very large united Tea Party group in Ohio. They bring up that they wish the governor would push harder on right to work. That would probably not be very good for him to do politically for the general election, but it certainly is something that the Tea Party base, at least, is quite upset about.
And social conservatives are concerned that, you know, they still don't have the heartbeat abortion bill, and there's some suspicion that somehow the Kasich administration is keeping that off of his desk because he really doesn't want to deal with that headache. And so, you know, there's some suspicion there that maybe he's not all on board on some of that.
And then there's the Jobs Ohio issue where liberals and conservatives have joined forces to open up the books. That's still pending at the Ohio Supreme Court right now.
Sure. Jobs Ohio is an area that the Democrats keep pounding on over and over again. It's a private nonprofit agency set up by the Kasich administration.
Paid for by
liquor bonds sold and backed by liquor revenues. And it's a little bit of a black box because it's not subject to the open records and open meetings laws. And they're not subjected to the same ethics.
Which the legislature enacted and the governor signed. And the guy who argued before the Ohio Supreme Court happens to be Maurice Thompson, who is with the
1851 Center.
1851 Center.
Who is the one suing over Medicaid expansion. So,
Again, it's, you know, we can go through these individual issues and say, okay, this is, you know, are they pinpricks or are they, you know, open knife wounds in Kasich's, political campaign, if you will.
Nothing feels like an open knife wound.
Yeah. I mean, not to be too graphic for your listeners on a Monday morning.
They can hack it.
Okay.
They can hack it. Nothing feels like an open knife wound at this point. It's just that between that and the 7% lead at this stage in the game against a relative unknown, it's the combination of things that are curiouser.
And Chrissy brings up right to work, and that's a faction. I'm not sure how
big. It's not just what he's done, it's stuff he hasn't done.
Yeah, and I can't imagine he wants to go even close to that because, you know, you want to bring back echoes of Senate Bill 5, that could make Senate Bill 5 look like small potatoes if you really took that to the wall.
I agree with you. I'm just saying that when I talk to these, and it's mm-hmm. the Ohio Liberty Coalition, that's what the C stands for.
Used to be to them.
But so every time I talk with them, I do, that is brought up as a major issue for them. And I really, again, I don't see that. That would not help the governor, and I don't see that getting pushed. But
what about the latest poll on the president's approval rating is at an all-time low in Ohio? Was it at the lowest state in the country? Did they poll? He poll lowest in Ohio out of the all 50 states?
Well, it's for the Quinnipiac states, which is maybe 10-ish.
All right.
They are generally the swing states in the state or in the country, yes.
So to what extent do you expect someone like Barack Obama to affect someone like Ed Fitzgerald's chances in a state like Ohio? Laura?
Well, I think that Obama's dismal polling numbers in Ohio, I think it hit like 34% approval rating. I think it's linked to the fact that we had that government shutdown. You know, Ohio has a lot of federal government jobs, particularly the Dayton area with Wright-Patterson.
Well, then Congress must be right down there with them.
Oh, Congress is in the toilet, too. And then I think that the Obamacare rollout has been they've just been hammering on that over and over again. They declared over the weekend that it was fixed and that people can get online and get signed up as need be. But I think Obama's numbers will rebound somewhat next year, depending on what happens. Maybe they'll go further south, but we'll see.
It's always tricky to, you know, presidential popularity. How does that bleed down to a governor's race? And, you know, it all goes into the mix. It's a question of how much. Again, is it just a little dash, or is it something that's going to really affect the taste of the campaign, if you will? I don't know. I guess it goes maybe more toward the whole Democratic brand, so to speak, almost more so. So it almost transcends Obama and Fitzgerald to some extent.
Well, we mentioned, though, that Fitzgerald is struggling with name recognition right now. And again, we are early in the campaign. But if he's not able to improve on that, then the election very, very well could be a referendum on the president's popularity here in Ohio. And one other thing to point out is that some political scientists like to say that Democrat voters show up when they're really excited about a candidate, but they're not as likely to show up if they're not excited. So if the Democrat brand is struggling because of the president or if Ed Fitzgerald doesn't improve his name recognition, that could prove a real issue for him in 2014.
It's going to be really interesting. You know, there was mention that the Kearneys are really good friends, personal friends, with the Obamas.
Especially with Michelle Obama.
Right. So are there going to be joint appearances? Is he going to be in to raise money?
Well, he raised a boatload of money for the Obama campaign.
Yeah. Well, is it going to go the other way now, I guess? And, you know, Republicans will try to make hay with that as well. So, you know, again, political strategists will try to use any angle they can. So if they think tying him to Obama will work, they'll do it.
But having his Rolodex when it comes to campaign finances won't hurt Ed Fitzgerald a bit.
Well, not only that, but if they can get the grassroots campaign list.
Mm-hmm.
And Chrissy's right. It's, you know, we've been seeing this model in very recent history in Ohio where we had the bigger turnouts in the presidential years, almost a Democratic model. But the off year, you know, the 2010, the enthusiasm wasn't there. And again, the trend lines would say 2014 is not going to be a Democratic year in Ohio.
Oh, those fickle voters. We'll continue our conversation. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We have a State House Reporter Roundtable today with Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, Chrissy Thompson from the Cincinnati Enquirer, and Daryl Rowland from the Columbus Dispatch. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Don in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Don.
Morning. I was wondering what the successes have been in Congressman Yucco and Congressman Hagan's efforts to get the initiative to legalize medical marijuana on the ballot for 2014.
All right. Any talk about that, Darrell Rowland?
State representatives, not congressmen, of course, that's a good question.
Yep, yep.
I don't think the legislation itself will go anywhere. We do have, however, citizen petition efforts, and there are two or three, I think. Well, you know, one is more or less dealing with hemp. One deals with medical marijuana. Another deals with marijuana in another way. There are signatures being gathered, so we will see. Now, that's potentially on the ballot next year in 2014, which I don't know, may help turnout down ticket.
Well,
what
about the gay marriage issue as well?
Well, that's actually a great issue. You know, when we talk about turnout and not the off year, but an off year election for gubernatorial. But if you have something like legalizing gay marriage in Ohio, that could drum up. That certainly worked in 2004, didn't it? That may have put George Bush in the White House. So, and it will be interesting to see which way that will cut this time around, however. Mm-hmm. So if you have that, you have one of the marijuana issues. There could be a plethora of issues as well. If Right to Work somehow, there's a petition group doing that. If they would get enough signatures and throw that in the mix, it could be a very volatile mix on the ballot next year.
Back to the medical marijuana thing, the last time I checked in with them, they had there's two groups, and there's some overlap between the groups. One is for medical marijuana, and the other is for all-out legalization. And they each need, I think, 385,000 signatures. The one that was the furthest ahead so far only had about 35,000 signatures. But they are convinced that if they get to 100 by spring, then some national groups will come in and fund them to get paid signature gatherers, and they can put them over the hump. We'll see.
What's the deadline for that to get on the ballot?
It's in early July.
Okay. Well, that's still quite a bit of time.
Remember also with the same-sex marriage initiatives that a lot of the proponents of same-sex marriage, of gay marriage, are divided on that issue.
Right. There's two groups.
Correct. They're including, State Representative Nikki Antonio, who is gay, is not in favor of trying to put this on the ballot next year.
Does favor same-sex marriage.
Correct.
Yeah, divided on timing, you mean.
That's right, yes, on whether this should be on the ballot, right.
Well, the trick is they have to carefully look at the polling numbers and see how it's likely to play out. The concern, I think, for the advocates of gay marriage is that if they put it on to the ballot too soon in 14 and it goes down, it'll be another 15 years before Ohio revisits the issue.
What's the logic of that, given the trends?
Just that, it's been 10 years since we've had it on the ballot in, it was 2004. So, it might take another 10 before somebody is willing to fund a campaign and to, push through for it. It could be that Ohio may be the last state to agree to it, 10 or 15 years down the road, depending on how it plays out in either 14 or 15 or whenever it gets on the ballot in Ohio.
We have to remember that it's expensive to get these signatures.
Right.
Even if public opinion is trending toward this, just in general across the country, Laura mentioned the number of signatures upwards of close to 400,000 that are required. But in order to get that number approved, you have to gather far many more signatures.
Yeah, you need to
that.
Get at least 600,000 or so, because there's such a high invalidation rate. And I think that one of the things that the advocates for putting it on the ballot in 2014 have going for them is that Ian James has been doing all this pro bono work for it. Ian is a supporter of gay marriage and wants to put it on the ballot in 14.
And has run plenty of campaigns in his day.
And he owns a company that does petition circulation.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's convenient. But if it got on the ballot, it's kind of curious. I mean, if it got on the ballot, would those two group would want the one group wouldn't necessarily oppose it. They've always said they wouldn't oppose it. But if it did get on the ballot, and you're saying if it doesn't pass, it could be another 10 years. It just makes you wonder what would the powers that be do on this issue? Would they finally come together because they know it could be another 10 years before they could pull it off again?
I think they would have to, or it would not pass. I mean,
yeah.
But maybe not.
Seemingly, it'd be a self-fulfilling prophecy if you would, you know, you would have major advocates of an issue and they would sit at home. Then if you wanted to be right badly enough, I guess you could say it was too early, but I don't know if they'd want to sacrifice their cause for that.
I don't think that's not what I hear from them. I just...
If they get it on the ballot...
What they're saying now is just that they do not think now is the time, and they would rather spend their money and time on changing public opinion before they start gathering signatures. So if it did get on the ballot, I can't imagine that they would not support that effort.
And again, looking at the different turnout scenarios of a 2014, a gubernatorial year versus a 2016, a presidential year, the highest turnout, and, you know, more likely for Democratic voters to be out to the poll, which obviously tend to support gay marriage more.
Right. All right, so let's look ahead to 2014. Besides politics, what before the end of the year, what is the what is the Ohio General Assembly up to? What are they going to get done? Anything? Nothing at all? What? Because it's the end of a 2-year. It's not the end of the session. Okay.
No, it's midway through the legislative session. We got another year to go. But you know, one of the things that they're doing is because they have had Medicaid expansion, they're going to end up saving money because prisoners will be covered under Medicaid instead of under the state general revenue budget and a bunch of other stuff. So they have about $400 million in savings. And now they're kind of debating what to do with that money. Senate leadership is behind State Senator Chris Widener from Springfield. He's got a bill to give it back to taxpayers by reducing the state income tax by 4%. That would be on top of the previous cut that was instituted. There's another bill being floated by one Democrat and one Republican to give the money to the local government funds to kind of restore some of the cuts that happened under
Kasich's
first budget.
Which have been pretty much demolished.
Right.
Over the last 10 years.
So there's a lot swirling around on Medicaid. There's also a couple of Medicaid reform bills that are floating around. And I think that the House is going to definitely try to get some of that stuff passed before the Christmas break.
Right. The two Medicaid reform bills, which are include things like workforce development, things like that to try to decrease the Medicaid population eventually, those are scheduled to be potentially voted out of committee this week. So those could pass this week or next week out of the House. But a lot of the things that each chamber is passing right now, there's very little chance that the other chamber will take those up. So a lot of these, the question is it something that it's a high enough priority, especially for Republicans, that they want to take it up before a primary next year? Or are we going to wait and see these later in the session or even in lame duck next year?
Yeah, you ask about, you know, what's going to pass in each individual house as opposed to what actually gets done.
Well, no, I'm not sure what's going to get done.
Yes. Well, big difference. What's going to get done, maybe not that much because, you know, when our reporters ask Bill Batchelder, Speaker of the House, about Widener's tax cut bill, I would have expected him to say, oh, sure, because it's, you know, the way they've been on tax cuts, hey, you know, if 10% is good, how about, you know, 14% is even better. But he started talking about, you know, things like veterans, fighting, you know, Ohio's growing drug problem, things of that nature, which sounds like spending money, doesn't it? And not cutting. So I don't know how it's going to wash out. There's you know how it is, Ann. When there's a pile of money sitting around the State House, everybody's got an idea how to use it. Now, whether they resolve that by the end of this calendar year, which means basically in the next 2 weeks, I don't know. I'm not sure we'll see that.
There's another bill that is likely, I think it's got a vote on Wednesday, is Bill Seitz's electricity bill. This is it's supposed to get a substitute bill, amendments, and a vote, I think, on Wednesday. It would ease some requirements that were placed on utilities in a big reform bill that passed, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. Right now, they're mandated to get 12.5% of their electric power from renewable sources by 2025 and also cut consumer consumption by 22% by 2025. And this Seitz's bill would undo a bunch of those requirements. I think First Energy was backing this pretty heavily. Some of the other utilities are now in favor of it. Environmental and consumer groups are opposed to it.
And there was a large amendment to this bill last week, even compromising with the environmental groups and several manufacturing groups that have come out on their side saying, we think that this bill favors utilities too much. That amendment was last week. There's going to be more amendments this week. The question is, you know, how much of these changes will stay in place by the time the bill actually gets to the Senate floor. And we won't know till Wednesday, but there are lots and lots of changes being made. As far as how they would affect the average ratepayer here in Ohio, your listeners who are actually paying their electric bill, you know, the question is whether these energy efficiency measures that utilities are required to take, whether those actually save customers money by over the long run, you know, making the customers or the utilities not have to build new power plants, you know, less electricity use on the grid is less expensive. There's that concept. Or the other concept as well, this is being passed down to consumers about $250 a month and how much you pay for these energy efficiency standards. So that's the debate.
Are the manufacturers thinking it favors utilities too much because it's the manufacturers are being held to many of the same standards or some of the same standards?
One of their big complaints was, and Laura may be able to chime in more on this, but one of their big complaints was that the utilities got to benefit too much from the energy efficiency changes that they were making. They got to book the savings themselves before the law required them to pass a lot of those on to the consumer, which in this case would be the manufacturer, which are paying a lot for power.
Okay. All right. Laura, chime?
I'm not chiming. Okay. My chime is done.
What else? Nothing?
What else? There's a bunch of election reform bills pending.
Those are the ones that seem to be the priority of both houses, controlled by Republicans, of course. So.
And the election reforms would mean easier to get to the polls or not as easy to get to the polls or none of the above?
In very general terms, they want to shorten early voting periods. Probably the one that's got most acceptance is eliminating so-called Golden Week, where you can not only register but actually cast an absentee in-person ballot at the same time. A little more controversial, I think. Well, maybe not. It is about, you know, do all Ohioans get mailed an absentee ballot? Mm-hmm. Things of that nature. And there's interesting competing voices on these. And even Secretary of State John Husted, who, of course, is Ohio's chief elections official, obviously a very loyal Republican, is opposed to some of this stuff. And almost starts asking the question, why is it that Republicans have fallen into this trap of always seemingly being against narrowing voting rights, you know, making things harder and more restrictive, and, you know, and sort of giving that issue to the Democrats, where they're always in favor of, you know, making it easier and more inclusive of voting. So we'll see how much credence his words carry in these next couple of weeks, maybe.
The Secretary of State?
Yeah. Because he's kind of warning. He certainly warned his party off the voter ID proposal. That was, I mean, it's still there, but it was being seriously considered, several months ago. I think he was responsible, along with some other people, for shooting that down, at least for the time being.
When would these laws, when would the laws take effect, the reform bills? Is there any, would they be emergency? Would they be within 3 months of being enacted or signed by the governor if they did?
Well, they to get an emergency clause where they would take effect immediately, you would need some Democrat votes. So that's
right.
Not likely to happen.
Right.
But it's a 90-day period, correct? And so most of these would go into effect before the general. They've kind of missed the window for the primary for most of those. Although, the big concern was with the filing deadline for the minority party bill. That's February 5th. Is that right? Early February, and
yeah.
they did get that done in time. So some of these would actually take place before the primary election. So I apologize for that.
Which again is the subject of a lawsuit now.
Minority meaning that the Libertarians, the Green parties, those sorts of it's tougher for them to get on the ballot.
Right.
Now.
Yeah. And when we say minority party, that is a definition in Ohio law. You're just not one of the two major parties here.
Right.
So yeah, Greens or what have you. And I tell you, the moves to restrict the minor parties' rights, the restrictors have not had a good track record in court. They've been shot down a lot of times in federal court because, cutting off ballot access to candidates and things of that nature, just not viewed very kindly by many federal judges.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about all of it. There'll be more next week. Laura Bischoff, Dayton Daily News, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And Chrissy Thompson, welcome to the All Side Show, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Look forward to seeing you again.
Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Enquirer and Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here again, Ann. Thanks.
Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.